Say that again. Hey, Chamesh Megillos, February 25th. Okay, so, our class is going to start off with the last pasuk. It says that Mordechai was not accepted by all of his brethren, but Pirshu Imenu Mitzvah Sanhedrin. Somehow, it was something that he had achieved that was not universally accepted. And this will simply raise the question that the promises made by Yirmiyahu, chapter 31, by Yechezkel in the last 9 chapters of his book, by Chagai in Sanhedrin, all the great promise that seemed to be unfolding for Bayis Sheni, made by Zechariah, the offers of Koresh at returning to build the land. Why did the second Beis HaMikdash not succeed according to the promises made by prophets? Don't we learn that when a prophet makes a promise for good, it has to happen? Remember where we learned that from? Yirmiyahu made a promise of 70-year galus, and when others said, not only 70 years, it will be 2 years. Right? So he said, you know what? If it's 2 years and then you come home after that, that's not a proof that I'm lying. It could be that you did an amazing tshuva. God went back on his decree. But as soon as it's 2 years and more and you don't return, then you'll know that he's a liar. Because when God makes a promise for good, he doesn't go back.
But it was a case also where it was bad for somebody, but since it was good for, it was in David's case over there, that it was a good prophecy for David becoming king, but Saul would lose the kingship. In that case over there, the nevuah was that David would become king, and that Saul had lost it, so it was bad for Saul, but David had already done it.
Okay, that could be an exception, but Hashem's promise that I would have kept your malucha ad olam if you had just listened to me. All right, this is what we'll do, is that every time something that is promised for good ends up not happening, it's because there was some contingency. When Yechezkel says, build this base of Mikdash and it'll stand forever, right? But it was destroyed. What kind of lie is that? It's not a lie, because he said, and you'll be ashamed of your guilt. And Israel weren't ashamed. Ibn Ezra raises this question with the Flashonos of Gula. He says, and I'll take you to the land. But that didn't happen to most of them. They died in the desert, the vast majority of them, right? So Ibn Ezra says Hashem was talking to the young ones. I'm not so sure about that. Dor HaChaim, who asked the same question, said that in between the fourth and fifth Lashon, in between and Behevesi is one pasuk. It says, "Vidatem ki ani Hashem hamotzias them." Right? You will know that I am the God that took you out of Egypt. If you don't, then you're not doing Behevesi. Even if every Jew worships Avodah Zarah, I'm doing these four things for you right now. But if you do know me and demonstrate that you know me, I'll take you to Israel too. But if you don't, you might get stuck with something else. Right? The great promises of how great Bayis Sheni would be, even greater than Bayis Rishon. Right? And it did not materialize Shegoram Hachit. Right? If you look at the sources on the back of this page. So the Daf Lamed Vav says. See it? Adivram Kho Hashem, Adivram Zukanisa. Adivram Kho Hashem, Zubi Rishona. Adivram Zukanisa, Zubi Shneer. A more may add to Ruina Yisrael, Asoslam Nais, Bibia Shneer, Kabir Rishona, El Shabbat. The return to Israel the second time should have been even the same type of return as the first time, with all the miracles, like with Kriyas Yamsu, like Makos. But they didn't deserve it. Shigaram Hachet. Sin overcame them. All of the promises of this greatness and the prophets I just mentioned were all contingent on their behavior, on their not sinning, and they sinned. Yes?
But we say that the reason that Hashem took out Bnei Yisrael from the tribe is that they had reached the 49th level of Tumah. So why did they deserve it over these other people?
I think that Hashem took us out of Egypt just then because the time was up. It's time to go. You can't ask on every single Maimar Chazal that you've heard over fitting it into this. It was time to go. Now it's, you know, 70 years were up, and now it's time to have the same great promise to start a new commonwealth you did, like you did under Yahushua. But it never really achieved anything. We never had independence. It was never independence. Either the Persians, the Greeks, or the Romans always ruled over us. A short, brief time during the Hanukkah story, we had a little degree of independence. Look, the next source, number 12, goes even one step further. Famous Machlokes Ben Zoma and the Chachamim, right? Says Maskirin Tzias Mitzrayim Balelos, Amar Belozer Ben Azari, Reini Kemen Shiv Mishanas, Pesos Belozer Chisi, Shetzvei Tzias Mitzrayim Balelos, Achador She Ben Zoma. Now, why would I think Tzias Mitzrayim should not be mentioned at night?
Tzias Mitzrayim
is mentioned elsewhere, not just in that parsha. But what else?
Yes, we're taken out during the day.
Okay, we left Egypt during the day, but why wouldn't I think to do it at night? I mean, a lot of mitzvahs come only by day. What do they all seem to have in common? Says the Mishnah Megillah.
The sea.
They all have the word Yom attached to it. Yom Tzurei Lachem, Lukachtim Chem, Yom Rishon, Yom Akrivchem, right? Yom Ashmini Mol Besar L'So. If the word Yom is attached to a mitzvah and it's done at night, the Gemara will ask why. It says, the Matis Kor Yisrael says, Chom Yitz Mitzrayim, Kol Yemei Chayecha. If the Pasuk had just said, the Matis Kor Yisrael says, Chom Yitz Mitzrayim, Kol Chayecha, I would never have such a Havamina. Of course, it's Yitz Mitzrayim should be at night. So what did Ben Zoma Darshan take a look? He says,
you could just say Kol Chayecha.
You could say Kol Chayecha too. You could just say Yemei Chayecha also. We'll see what Kol Yemei Chayecha comes to add something, right? So he says, Ad Shador Shem Ben Zoma, Shneimar, Lamant Yisgur Yisim Tzitz Chomitz Mitzrayim Kol Yemei Chayecha, Yemei Chayecha Hayom, Kol Yemei Chayecha Halelos, Kol Hayom, meaning the whole 24-hour time of what's called a day, and not just the regular Xeris and Kassar of Yom. Right? What the Chacham say? So according to this, what is Ben Zoma's opinion about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Yemos Mashiach? Ben Zoma, not the Chacham. Not at all, because he uses his call for Olam Hazeh. Mechayecha in the morning, day, Kol Mechayecha at night. Not at all in the next world. They, the Chachamim, say, all right, not at night in Olam Hazeh, and not at night in Yemos Mashiach, but in day in both. Right? This is one of the explanations of why the Rambam omitted Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim from his Minyan HaMitzvahs. Okay, so what the Gemara says, Tanya, Omar Alei Rabbi Zoma, the Chachamim, V'chi Maskirin Yetzias Mitzrayim, Nemos HaMashiach, Ben Zoma says to the Chachamim, what are you talking about? We don't have Yetzias Mitzrayim in the next in Nemos HaMashiach, but look, Kvar Nomar. Hinei Yomim Bo Ibnu HaMashiach, but lo yimru od Chai Hashem Asher Lo Esbnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, ki im Chai Hashem Asher Lo V'eshir Evi Yisera Beis Yisrael Meretz Tzafon Nemi Kol Ratzos Asher Yidach Tumshah. Right? What this Nevuah means to say is that when you return from the Gos, of course, Nemos HaMashiach means third base Mitzvah, this is a fundamental issue, in Tanakh, when Yechezkel talks about rebuilding the base of Mikdash, is he talking about Bayis Sheni or Bayis Shlishi? Or both? So Rashi says Bayis Shlishi, Pashut. But Ibn Ezra says Bayis Sheni, Pashut. Rashi sort of says that it's Bayis Sheni, Ela Shegorah Machet, it becomes Bayis Shlishi. But these people building this house did not expect for it to be destroyed one day. Right? I'm saying when the prophets gave prophecies about what's going to happen, like Zechariah or something, when the end of, you know, as they were building the second base of Mikdash, right? They expected that to be referring to now, not 2,500 years from now. Right? So when Yirmiyahu says that when I return you from the north, you will be so amazed at the greatness of that return and what it will usher in, that it will put Yetzias Mitzrayim in the background. You will not even refer to me as the God who took you out of Egypt anymore. My father says it has to do with how we call it months. Right? But So the machlokas here is that the point of Ben Zoma is that Yirmiyahu means to say, it's two different prophecies in Yirmiyahu, one chapter 16, one chapter 23, that the potential was for Bayis Sheni to be, to the return to, after the Golos, 70 years, to be much greater than Yitzias Mitzrayim. And again, Shebara Machait, it was supposed to be source number 12, it's just a reiteration of source number 11. Only source number 11 was based on a drash of Ad Yavorim Kho Hashem, Ad Yavorim Zukhanisa. Source number 12 is a real live pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Okay. What happened? What went wrong? What happened to the Jews under the Persians that made it that they didn't heed all of the words of Nehemiah and Ezra and Chagai Zecharia Malachi to rebuild and make it greater than it was before? Gedol yihyeh kevod habayit hazeh ha'acharon min harishon, says Chagai. Hear it again. Gedol yihyeh kevod habayit hazeh ha'acharon min harishon. Don't be so amazed by his use of the word acharon. Right? Acharon can sometimes mean not the last one, but the latter one. We might be one after this. Right? We see many times in the Torah the word acharon and then another one right after it. Yes?
We can also write on the assumption that he thought this would be the last one. So it's not.
I have to hope that they did, yeah.
So they
would have to hope so, yeah. Well, it, just as much as we're quite certain that this next one we hope to build will also be the last one. I'm not saying otherwise.
Is that a guarantee?
I don't know. I mean, Rashi says in a number of places in his writings that the third Beis Hamikdash will be built by Hashem himself. Kodesh Baruch Hu. I was walking in Meir Sharon recently and I saw this amazing large painting, a beautiful frame. And it's a picture of three or four of the Gedolim in Israel now. Yashav, Stamin, all standing in near Harabayas, and looking up at the Shemayim as a Beis Hamikdash wrapped in fire is falling from heaven. Ready to fall right down on top of that mosque. Right? That, when we get up to Shir HaShirim, you'll see. I hope you can understand why it's Shir HaShirim. When we get up to Shir HaShirim, you'll see was the default position of the Jews living in the Middle Ages who could not fathom any natural progression anywhere within hundreds and hundreds of years of the abject, terrible position that they lived in at the time of any hope of Jews having independence in Israel and actually building a Beis Hamikdash. So how could it ever happen given our terrible state? So yeah, it would happen. So this, we deserve it. Hashem will make it happen in an instant. That was perhaps the most realistic way to approach it at the time. Not the Rambam's opinion, of course. So let me go one step further and then we'll get right into Esther. Of course, we have today and next week, so we have to finish today, so don't worry. But the source number 13 is a beautiful prophecy in Sefer Yirmiyahu, which the Malbim takes in the direction I'd like to go now. First, an introduction. Yirmiyahu chapter 31 is the undoing of all the negative prophecies of this book. It's Rashi's favorite parak in all of Tanakh. Yirmiyahu chapter 31 is the only full parak in the entire Sefer that is Nechama. It's not Torah, the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And it is a lot of very famous prophecies. One of those prophecies is that when I call you back to Israel, after this long goes, he already announced the 7-year goes. When I call you back, I am going to create something new in the land. What that new thing is? Nikeva tisovev gover. The woman shall encircle the man. Now Yirmiyahu had, throughout his book, until then, been calling for a cessation of weddings. Not that you're not allowed to have them. You're not even going to want to. Who's going to want to get married? Yirmiyahu himself, in chapter 16, was told not to get married. Because if you get married, have children, they're all going to die. Don't do it. So Yirmiyahu says people will simply not want to get married. Chapter 31 is where he starts to undo these negative prophecies. Now you know why. At a wedding, you start off singing about people getting married with the words, Od Yishoma Be'orei Yehuda. Once again, people will want to get married because he was telling them that that's going to stop for a while. Right? Od Yishoma Be'orei Yehuda. Now, when we marry, we men, we pursue the woman. Right? Because, as the Gemara Kiddushin says, we lost a rib, we have to go find it. Get it? When you lose a metzia, your wallet doesn't go looking for you. You've got to go looking for it. Right? So, the man pursues the woman. The new thing upon your return to Israel is that the woman will pursue you. Now, what on earth does that mean? It certainly is not referring to men and women, literally. No more than Shir HaShirim is a love story between a man and a woman. What does Rashi say? That until now, I have pursued you. Namely, Hashem has sent prophets and told you to come back. You have strayed from me, and I have begged you to return by sending you the prophets. But I am going to create something new in the world. You will have to pursue me. That's the Purim story of Esther Pun. Right? You will have to pursue me. You will not see me. I'll show something good about this. The Gemara in the Sefer Shabbos talks about Kibbul B'Kibbul. We're going to see something profound tikkun of something that was wrong of how B'nai Israel received the Torah the first time that was corrected. Why do I say it was wrong? Because the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, we are not bound to the Torah because of what happened at Har Sinai. Why not?
Because
it was forced upon us. Har Kagigis. We're bound to the Torah because of that. The Torah because of Kibbul B'Kibbul, Kibbul B'Kibbul, Kibbul Masha Kibbul Afar. The Mekayim, what they accepted the first time by coercion. I digress, and I will return to Yirmiyahu with the men and the women in about 10 minutes. Here is the digression. Tosfos on that Gemara asks, how can you say that the Jews were coerced into receiving the Torah, given the fact that they so readily said Naaseh ben Nishma?
Is there an answer to this?
They say Naaseh first.
But they said Naaseh first, right? So on all levels, it seems that you see in the various Gemaras, the angels came down, they gave us crowns, that Naaseh ben Nishma was a beautiful part of our history. Not so fast. Yes?
Someone's holding a gun to your head and says, take out your wallet. You're not sitting there thinking, maybe I should bargain with you. You're just going
to
do it.
Precisely the point. And now I turn to Meiri on this Gemara. Meiri Shabbos Daf Beches. Meiri says that this is not a contradiction. First of all, the textual basis is Vayishyatzvu Besachtis Hohar. What does that mean?
Stood at the base of the mountain.
I know, but what does the Drash say it means?
They were under the mountain.
They're under the mountain. They stood under the mountain because the mountain was over their heads, threatening them, right? So, Meiri says, I'll tell you what the threat was. When I'm breaking your arm and I say, give that get or I'll break your arm, and it's okay, I'll give it, right? Remember the philosophy of the Rambam, you know, everyone wants to do the right thing. He's not really being forced, he's just being move to do what he really wants to do, right? You ever hear that? Yeah. So you break his arm, you're about to threaten to break his arm, you say, accept this Torah or I'm going to bury you right here. Basically, your free will has been removed from you with the gun at your head. You're not going to start thinking and then hesitating. You know very quickly and in a visceral way what you really want to do and what you need to do. So B'nai Yisrael had a survival instinct and said, we don't want to just die here. We'll receive the Torah. Their free will not to receive the Torah, their free will to respond to accepting the Torah the way the Goyim did, which was, what was their first question always?
What's in it?
Right? And when they heard something that's in it that they didn't like, right? So they said, no, I can't live with this. Forget it. We didn't ask what's in it. We just said Naaseh, right? So hold on. I'll take a question in a second. So the free will to reject the Torah was removed from us. Why wasn't it removed from Yishmael and Esav, etc.? Because they had not experienced Yitzhias Mitzrayim and Yitzhias Yamsuf just now. But we did. There was no free will to reject the Torah because of the miracles we had just seen. Which we've not seen in the Purim story, but hold on. Because of the miracles we had just seen, right? Would you believe that Tosefta, it's interesting, what I'm about to tell you does not appear in Shas Ba'afi Yerushalmi. It appears in the Tosefta Baba Kama, and it appears in Medrash Rabbah, in Shmos, and Vayikra. These three sources list seven types of Geneva. One of the seven types of Geneva is called Geneva's Das. The Tosefta lists a few different types of each type of Geneva, and it says Geneva's Das is, let's say the particular example that Tosefta gives is you know, the time of the Gemara, if you have a new barrel of wine, if you put in a spigot and start taking out wine, you better be sure that you have a lot to give out, because they didn't have refrigeration so well then, so the wine might spoil. You only open up a new barrel of wine if you have a lot of people coming over, or you're selling half of it or something. So here's the scenario. This guy's a Thursday afternoon, and this guy has a contract on Friday morning to sell 98% of his barrel. Okay, the barrel contains 100 gallons, and you have 98 gallons going out tomorrow. Right? And you have a few friends who have come over you haven't seen in many years, and they're over at your house, and you say, come on, I want to take it down to my cellar. Put in the faucet and you start taking out wine for them. You say, oh my goodness, what are you doing? Don't do this for us. You're opening up a new barrel for us. It's going to spoil on you. Right? What does he have to tell them?
It's not for you, son.
He said, let me just explain. I'm not doing something so profound for you. I have a contract to sell 98 gallons. Don't worry, I'll it won't spoil on you. Right? But if he doesn't tell them that, and instead he tells him something like, oh, come on, I'm just so thrilled to see you. I'm very happy that you came. You're giving him a false sense of indebtedness. You hear the Gnevis Das? Right? Now, there's a fine line here, because in some cases in the Gemara, there seems to be an allowance to give someone, you know, we can have shalom, or to make him feel good. In each case, there's a fine line that says he's fooling himself, not you're fooling him. Right? Remember the guy in Chulin who came into the town, and the students were leaving, and right, so Lamaisa, let me just collect everything together because I don't want to get sidetracked because I always forget. One of the examples of Gnevas Das in the Gemara is, get this, Bnei Yisrael saying Nase V'Nishma at the mountain, because you have no business screaming out Nase when you obviously have the potential to make an Egel in 90 days. Now, Rashi himself says this in his Kerish on the Torah, on the part of Dor Lo Emun Bom, a generation without a moon, to make sure that all this is taken away. No one does this. Dor Lo Emun Bom, Rashi writes that this nation has no emunah. Because look what they did. They said Nase V'Nishma. Amru b'sinai nase v'nishma, ulushor kala biblu avtocha samba suha egel. Now you can say, well, when they said it, they really meant well. They meant very well. They really meant well to say nase v'nishma. The gun was at their head, and they said, well, no, you're not even thinking. Whatever you say, God. But the fact that they did make the egel, I don't want to remove their free will from that, but the fact that they did make the egel afterwards meant that they did not give enough thought to this nase v'nishma. I would like to compare it to a beautiful Rambam. Get this? When he tells us how to teach a ger, how to be Jewish, he says you have to teach them Nase V'Nishma. They have to understand, but they also have to have commitment to put it to action. But which comes first? Commitment without knowledge is chaotic. I've met lots of people who say, you know, Rabbi, I've been thinking about becoming Jewish for a long time, I'm ready to become Jewish. You say, okay, what are the first words you say in the morning? Oh, I don't know. Say, no, I don't know what that is. He says, how are you ready to be Jewish? Because you read a few books from Arya Kaplan? What makes you Jewish? Right? So you have to know what you're doing. You have to know what tzitzis, you have to know tefillin, you have to know brachas, you have to know davening, you have to know taras mishpacha, you have to know shabbos, you have to know yom tov, you have to calendar. How do you have to know what's going on here? Right? You have to know what it means to be a blessing, to be a Jew. Guys, stop with the texting. Come on. So the So that's the Rambam says, that commitment, the guy is very, very much committed. He wants to live as a Jew for the rest of his life. Send his kids to yeshiva. But it's not enough, because what happens when, I'm not saying we have to teach Tariyat Mitzvahs. We have to teach you enough so that there's not only any kind of surprises that are going to make you want to make an egel or something like it. Right? At the same point, education and knowing without the commitment to do is not so great either. The Rambam writes that in order to become Jewish, the first foundation is Chochmah. It's Chochmah. The Nishma first. In fact, if you would Google the words Nasa and Nishma in the Torah, you will find them together in Pesukim about 100 times. You know how many times the word Nasa appears before the Nishma in the Torah? This one time. Every other time it's Ushmatem Vasisem. Right? Always. Especially Sefer Devarim has small little prophet but have just like eight to ten times the words Nasa and Nishma together, with Nishma first. Ushmatem Shema Yisrael. Right before the pasuk Shema Yisrael Shemakim Shemachad, look, Shama, Shamar, Lomad. Learn it first before you commit to doing it. Right? That was the problem in the Midbar, but not so much the commitment to do. That's beautiful. It's what drew them. What was the draw to commit before learning? Now you see my Purim connection.
The
wonderment, the miracles that they had seen. They based their acceptance of the Torah on the miracles they had seen. That's the Tikkun of Purim. That they accepted God's place in their lives without the miracles, without seeing Hashem. Hashem said all throughout history, I have been calling upon you. Now I am creating something new in the land. You are going to have to pursue me. You're not going to see me. And let's see if you can still get with the program, fast for me, do for me. Let's see what you can do. Kenosis Kola Yudim, and if you can do that, you can manage that. I will be there for you. I'll save you. So that is Rashi's derech of this Nekeva Tosev. And really interfaces with Shira Shira. Do you see what I've been doing so far this semester? How Koheles moved into Esther. If you read the article of the Rav, right? We are not forsaken. Now I'm showing you how Esther moves into Shira Shira, but should we still have some time for that? So, but let me just get one last point here, is that it is wrong for us to base our belief system on the miracle. The Rambam says this in a few places. All of Perek Tes Hilchos Tshuva is dedicated to this. Perek Zion in Hilchos Yisrodei HaTorah, we do not base our religion on miracles. We base it on Chochmah. Moshe is not believed because he performed miracles. He is believed because he taught his Torah. The last page of the Mishnah Torah in Hilchos Malachim, it has been censored. You will not find it in the traditional Rambam. You will find it in the Frankel Rambam. The last page of the Mishnah Torah, which is I've seen an original Rambam, the Vatican's display that was at the New York Public Library about 15 years ago, they had the chutzpah to display that page. It's censored. It was painted over with blue paint. Maybe you've seen a facsimile of it or something, because the last page explains where Christianity went wrong. Where did they go wrong? They based their belief on the irrational miracle. Someone walked on water, someone cured people. Ah, fine, work it out. Really? You cured? Oh, I don't believe it. It's ridiculous. So the Rambam makes it a point in a number of places. Again, Hilchos Isurei Bia, where he talks about conversion. Hilchos Malachim, where Christianity went wrong. Hilchos Tshuva, and Hilchos Yisrodei HaTorah. Okay? It's interesting. In the Hilchos Tshuva, the Tshuva chapter of the Torah, which is Vashevoseh Lubavecha, and Parshas Nitzavim, there you see practically every pasuk. Ushmatev Vasisa. Ushmatev Vasisa. Ushmatev Vasisa. It's amazing. Okay? So that is the problem, is that Bnei Yisrael too readily said Nase, where they were like, Gonev Das Elyon. Yeah, we're ready to do anything. You just tell us what to do, God. Yeah, fine. Are you sure? Sure you've heard everything? Now you see why I compared it to conversion, because Chazal tell us that what went on in Har Sinai is a conversion, right? There was a Korban, there was Dam Hartzah, right? it was mamish like a conversion there. Okay? All right. Now, I would just, I know I'm digressing this whole time with this about but I think it fits very nicely into Purim, because Purim is without the miracle. Right? I think I'll leave it. I'm going to continue with this. Now the Malbim's interpretation of Nekeva Tzisoviv Gaver. This is really very, very beautiful and prophetic in itself. Malbim wrote this commentary in about the year 1860, and he wrote that Nekeva Tzisoviv Gaver, while most others are likely to explain the Nekeva to be Israel and the Gaver to be God, right? He says, I think that the Gever is Israel. The Nekeva is the land of Israel. And just as a man is the one to be Kovesh, the woman, so to say, we shouldn't like to use that terminology, certainly not in English. A woman is not a conquest for you. But to some extent, there is a, there's some point of that the man has to pursue the woman, right? So when you want to go, when you want to go to a new land, there is an element of kibush, right? So, but when you come back to the land in the future, under the Persians, there will not be a kibush. Nekeva tisovev gaver. The woman will pursue you. The land will beckon you. What's the last pasuk in all of Tanakh? What? The last pasuk in Divrei Yavim says, Koresh declares to his people, the Lord, the God of Israel, has bestowed upon me the rights to all the lands of the world as we have, and I have committed myself to build a house in his honor. The God of the heavens and the earth, I have allowed his people, I am declaring to his people that they should make their way to Israel and build this house. Whoever wants, go and make aliyah. That's the last word, the Yahal. Right? So Persia allowed us back into the land without a kibush. Herein lies the problem. Because the Persians were so good to the Jews, because we found such political power in Persia, where the queen was one of our own, the king's prime minister is one of our own, right? This is a great danger. So that when God told all the masses of Jews living in the diaspora from the north, go down to Israel, it's time, the 70 years are over. Haggai begged the people, there's only 2 years left. The Beis HaMikdash isn't even built yet. And we have 2 years. It's been 68 years since the Korban. Right? Haggai got the job done. The Beis HaMikdash was built quickly. Right? But the people didn't come. Ezra had to consider the Leviim because no Leviim came. Right? Says the Gemara in Yevamos. So, and Yerushalmi in Ma'aseh Sheni. So, people just didn't come. There is this calling. It's free. You can just get to the land. No one's stopping you. There's no white paper. There's nothing stopping you. Just go. Right? Persians have allowed us to go. Artaxasta with Nehemiah and Koresh and Daryovish are helping us build. Yirmiyahu made the promise. They gave out to Soviet government. The land is beckoning us. Why didn't they go? Life is too good here. Look who's in power. Look at all we have. That's the problem. Purim does make a tikkun. We accepted Hashem without the miracle. But it led to its own problem that caused the second commonwealth not to succeed as it could have. Shegaram hachet. Look, before the story started, you had a problem that Nehenu misu'udas hachashverosh. Have you heard of that? Okay. Now, the Gemara in Megillah, let's open up the Megillah for a little bit. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah discusses why Ahasuerus is throwing this party right now. Remember? Made the cheshbon. Of when the 70 years should be over, and he saw that the 70 years are over and they're not going anywhere. Oh, I have defeated the Jews. Such a meal, and the Jews are enjoying it? Right? There were two cheshbonot of 70 years, the Gemara said, in chapter 25 and chapter 29, has two separate cheshbonos of 70 years. Because of that, there was a bit of confusion about when it's up. Even amongst the Jews, Daniel wasn't clear about it. Zachariah wasn't clear about it. Just like we're not clear about the arcades. Right? Even the first time. Remember the Bnei Ephraim made a mistake at Cheshbon? Okay. So, if Achashverosh, who feels very insecure to begin with, because remember, he is barely the son of a king. He is not. He's Hamoleich Mehudubad Kush. Right? He's married to a woman with a very Babylonian name. Chazal say Nebuchadnezzar's own daughter, but that's just building on the theme. But she's Babylonian. We know one thing from history very well. The Babylonians were very refined scientific people. The Persians were boorish, churlish, extremely ape-like. I mean, the Gemara even said, filled with hair. And everything about them was childish and boorish. And, men argue, oh yeah, well, the utensil that I use is prettier than both those. That's how they talk. Right? You know what I'm talking about, right? So, what does this mean? It means that the Persians are self-conscious about the fact that they just took over this kingdom. Well, don't get me wrong, the Persians were much better disposed towards the Jews. It's interesting, I just showed my shul Monday night a part of my Bible class. It's been topics in Mashiach all year. And we've been doing disputations, famous disputations throughout history over whether Christianity is right or not. Whether the Tanakh is the true, the New Testament is the true fulfillment of the Tanakh or not. So Monday night I showed the whole full film on called The Disputation between Pablo Christiani and Ramban. It's really quite amazing. The Spanish king involved is portrayed as a very, very upright man. The Christians who were involved, certainly the Pablo Christiani, the apostate Jew, are all come across as extremely opportunistic about doing for the church what they feel they need to do, even though it's obviously unfair, but also immoral, right? So the king, however, is a fair and decent man, but in his private life, phenomenally paganistic. In his private life, he wants to gain expiation from the Pope by kissing up, by forcing Jews to convert. But in his private life, you see that he's... this guy's again. You see that he's everything at the same time. Anyway, all right.
I asked them, they said that they just like to show people that they're... that's what they say.
Okay. Alright. Stack up on those donuts. Maybe we can throw them out some bagels. Alright, guys, so let's So it's interesting that the churlish, boorish, bearish kind of people, they're the good ones to us. It's the refined, Nazis, the refined, Babylonians, there's something left to be desired. But when you just take over such a land, you feel very self-conscious. Am I as good as they are? You know what I'm saying? So Achashverosh is born into this. He gets his kingdom into such a framework, right? And don't you see what this power struggle is with Vashti? I want to show her off and show how, as refined as you are, you're still subservient to us. And again, the Malbim points out that when he wants to have her come out, he says, Gam, Lohavi es Vashti Hamalka, Pasuk Yud Aleph. He wants to take out Vashti Hamalka, Lifnei Hamelech, Keser Malkus. Right? The Gemara is very creative, it says only with the Keser Malkus. But whatever. You can decide from that what you will. But he wanted to have to come out the very next pasuk, says, V'tima'ein Hamalka Vashti. Why did it change Vashti Amalka to Amalka Vashti?
She was the real reason he was king.
Right. She's saying, what are you talking about Vashti Amalka? Take me out. I'm Hamalka Vashti. I mean, foolish. Well, why is she objecting to this? Because there's much more than just a question of, you know, of coming out into the open with in an insulting way for a queen. Right? So she rejects this because she sees what's behind it. Right? All right. So this is a little internal Babylonian / Persian politics. How did the Jews fit into this? So obviously the Jew will fit in because there's a Jewish woman who's going to take this woman's place. But until now, I want you to see some amazing linguistic formulations in the beginning of Megillas Esther, and you'll see what Chazal really meant when they said, Esther min ator minayim, v'anoch yaster asir panayim kebayim ahu. Familiar with that, Gemara?
Yeah.
Right? Where do you find a reference to Esther? Everyone, Esther Minotaur Minayin, Vashti Minotaur Minayin, Haman Minotaur Minayin, Mordechai Minotaur Minayin, everyone is Minotaur Minayin in this book. Because we know that its canonicity is questioned. It's not quite clear why it belongs in the Bible. There's no real moral message in the book. There's no call for, there's a call for fasting, right, so that I can be successful. But it's not your typical Sefer in Tanakh. And there have been many, many Purim stories like this. Look at Purim in the second week of Judea. There's hundreds of them throughout history of Jews being saved at the last minute somehow miraculously. Right? But don't you see what's happening in the beginning of this parak? Is that when Chazal talked about Ahasuerus making this party because he saw that the 70 years to rebuild the temple are up and they're not doing anything. Right? And he got the cheshbon wrong by about 20 years because he didn't realize that the 70 years was a different cheshbon for that, right? That's how the Gemara expresses it. And it's true. Yirmiyahu in chapter 25 and chapter 29 give two different starting points for the 70-year goals. Right? And what is also true here is that I'll start it with a well-known minhag, is that when you lane the pasuk about the party, somehow an Eicha trap gets in there. Why are we landing an Eicha trap? What does Eicha have to do with the party? Chelim, Mekelim, Shonim, right? Chelim, Mekelim, Shonim. Why do we have some Kelim? So we have a lot of Kelim. Kelim for this party. So what? So when Chazal tells us that with the Kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, so now, if you read, let's read through some of the descriptions of this party. The third year, which the Gemara says corresponds to the 70th year from Nebuchadnezzar. He's showing off Kvod Malchuso, Yikor Tiferes Giduoso, 180 days, and Bishushan Habira, Achur Karpas Utchelas, Achuz Bechav Lebutz, Vargamon, Aglila Kesef, Amudei Sheish, Mitosa Haba Chesef, Avitzpas Bahat Vashesh, Vidar Vesochores. Hebra. These words are not common words in the Bible. Most of them appear practically exclusively with respect to the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. Correct. Shushan HaBira, excuse me, there's only two cities in the whole Bible called Bira. You know what they are? Shushan HaBira and Yerushalayim HaBira. The description of Ahasuerus's court is meant to mirror the description of the Chatzar Beis HaMikdash. The description of his glory that he is celebrating here is purposely using words that are found only with respect to the construction of the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash to let us know, almost in a satirical way, that for the Jews in Perek Aleph and Megillas Esther, Yerushalayim has been replaced by Shushan. There was even, by the way, in the Beis Hamikdash. Have you heard? There was a design in the Beis Hamikdash called the Shushan Havira. Have you heard that? Yeah, there was a part of the Beis Hamikdash known as the Shushan Havira. So this took the place, the trappings of Achashverosh took the place of the beauty of the Tiferes of the Beis Hamikdash. By the way, when Ezra brings gets back up the Caleb to the Beis Hamikdash, and he restarts the workings of the Beis Hamikdash, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, in Ezra, take a look, open up, and you'll see he counts all the Caleb that he amassed for the Beis Hamikdash. Ezra, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph. You know how many there are? And you remember what the Gemara in Megillah says? How long did this party last?
30 days.
How many different types of people came to the party? It says, Chel parasim adai hapartimim v'sareya medinos lefanav and sarav avadav. 5 different types of people. Right? And it says he showed off 6 different types of glory that he took from the Beis HaMikdash, according to this drash. Osher kavod malchuso yikor tiferes gedulaso. 6 different types of glory for 5 different types of people each for 180 days. Each group, the governors, the mayors, the councilmen, the right? That's 5,400. There's all these amazing references to the fact that Ahasuerus' whole proposition here with this party is the defeat of the Jews. They're going down without building the temple. And the Jews are enjoying it. Nehenu misudas Ahasuerus. So, the fact that though is that as I'm presenting this to you in this way, I'm not sure that this problem is fixed. The problem is not fixed. Right? We may have returned to Hashem and fasted, but at the end of the story, Mordechai is still in power, right? Second in command, and when the Ezra and Nehemiah are begging the people, come back, it's time to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, it's time to start the second commonwealth. There was just so much attracting us here in Persia that a pitiful 42,360 altogether came back. That's all. 42,360. There is a Gemara that says on the Pasuk, Uva'u ha'ovdim be'eretz asher v'hanidochim be'eretz Mitzrayim v'shtechavu l'shev ha'kodesh b'Yerushalayim. What 2 countries are we returning from? Asher and Mitzrayim. Really? No other countries? They say no. Asher and Mitzrayim are symbolic of 2 types of countries. Asher, where we're happy to be. Mitzrayim, where it's Meitzar, where we're not happy to be. Jews will find themselves in many different lands, some on purpose, some by accident. Meitzar lands would be like Mitzrayim today, possibly. Algeria. There are some Jews still in these places. There's supposed to be 2 Jews in Afghanistan. They don't talk to each other. I'm serious. There's an article in the New York Times about them a few years ago. 2 Jews in Afghanistan, they don't talk to each other. One's in charge of this shul, one's in charge of that shul. Literally, there's 2 shuls. One in each one doesn't talk to each other. So there are Jews in Iran. There are lots of Jews in Iran now. Jews in Iraq. These are Meitzar lands. If they are given permission to leave, they'll fly right out of there. If they have any semblance of ability to do so.
That's actually not so true.
Okay, well, I mean, it's Iran. I know they had the opportunities because they're very wealthy there, and they can live there with some semblance of protection as long as they don't ever speak Hebrew or say the word Israel, right? So, but then there are Jews who live in other lands, like say, America, Australia, Canada. You know what I'm saying? Where it's a little better. That's what I'm saying. Right? much better for them. Those are the Asher lands. But the question is, you know, the prophet says that ultimately they'll come for both of them. But, you know, the Jews living in the Asher lands can go whenever they want. It's just that, you know, here we are, and we're not talking about that here and now, right? A little disingenuous to bring out this whole thing now. Here we are. Not only for Anusaf Yadibur, but here we are, right? So I just want you to understand, today we're just doing Perek Aleph. So next week we're going to do the rest of the Sefer Mitzvah Shem. But here, I just want you to understand what Perek Aleph is setting up for us. Right? Until now, we've been discussing sort of the bigger picture of how we accepted the Kibbutz even without the miraculous. There was a tikkun happening in this story, right? Because if the foundation of our belief was with the miracle, at least that changed here. Okay? Hashem never really picked up the mountain. It's just that we had a certain coercion of receiving the Torah based on something that practically removed our free will to reject it. I would say, you know, I'm about to tell you was based on the Ramban. Ramban, just very quickly, when Moshe said that the Bnei Yisrael won't believe me, remember that? Hashem said, "B'shavulu kalecha," Moshe said, "B'himol yaminu." So Hashem gives him three signs. A stick turned into a snake, back to a stick. Hand turned into the leprous, back to that. And water turned into blood, and back to water. So, according to Rashi, Moshe sinned in being choshev b'chayrim, and was shown signs of lashon hara. Tzaraas, snake, blood. According to Ibn Ezra, it's not a question of being choshev b'nei Yisrael. It's a question of doubting Hashem, because Hashem told him, "B'shamu l'kolecha." Right? So Ibn Ezra says, well, when Hashem said "B'shamu l'kolecha," he meant the Zakenim. Moshe was afraid that the people won't listen to me. In the end, at least according to Rashi, the Zakenim didn't listen to him either. They slipped away from him. Right? Remember that? They don't think Moshe came alone to the palace. Ramban is a different derech. Ramban says there's nothing wrong with Moshe saying "Behin lo yaminu li." It's perfectly understandable and acceptable for him to say that. Why? Because in between, after Hashem said they will listen to you, he's talking about Bnei Yisrael. So why Ramban says Moshe is not choshev b'chayrim, and he's not doubting Hashem's promise? This is what happens. There's one little inconvenient thing we're forgetting in between Hashem telling him "Bishabul kolecha" and Moshe saying "Behin lo yaminu li" is. And Hashem tells Moshe, "Paro will not listen to you. He will not let you out. I'm going to have to give him boy. I'm going to have to give him yad chazakah before he lets you out." Then Moshe says, "Ribono shel Olam, Abraham had dealings with Paro. Yitzchak had dealings with Paro, or with Avimelech. Yaakov had dealings with Paro. Yosef had dealings with Paro. Whoever had dealings with foreign kings, they had their way with the kings. They never had to worry. But if I go up to Paro and say, 'Shlach Hasami,' and he says, 'Get out of here,' right? They Israel are going to turn on me then. They're going to say, 'Lord, Hashem didn't appear to you.' Because if Hashem did appear to you, Paro would let us out right away. What's the game about? Right? So that's what I'm telling you. Hashem, when you say, 'Behin lo yaminu li,' so our Rabban says, what are the signs? Listen, Moshe, I know you feel inadequate. You've been a shepherd for 40 years, and 60 years ago, he's one sheep. Let me show you. See this stick? Snake, stick. Hand, leprosy, hand. Water, blood, water. I can turn anything into anything else and turn it back. Now you see why you were raised in the palace of the king. You were meant to talk to kings. Now you became a lowly shepherd for some time. You can talk to kings again. Don't worry, I'll give you the power to do so. You're the man. Right? This is what I want you to do. This is the purpose of these three signs. In lo yishmu l'kola osa rishon, yishmu l'kola osa acharon. Right? By the way, who is that for? Who were these signs for? Bnei Yisrael. Not but then Paro gets other signs later on. When Paro asks you for a sign, here's it. Right? So, but for now, these signs are for Bnei Yisrael. What purpose at this point, according to the Ramban, were the signs? When they stop believing you because Paro rejects you, then show them the signs. This fits beautifully with the Rambam, who said that the first point of our acceptance of Hashem should be nishma, the intellect, the chokhmah of the message. Share with them what you feel here at the sneh. Share with them what it feels to be in my presence. which they have not been for 210 years. Share with them the chokhmah of what it means to get close to Hashem, and then they will accept that. And when power rejects you, which I'm telling you now he will, and you feel that the people will turn on you then, they did, show them the miracles. One cannot blame B'nai Yisrael for the coercion of following the miracles as the basis of their statement, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Remember the Me'iri about the Kofalim Harkagigis? The real problem happened before then. Listen to this pasuk. Vayidaber Aharon es kol hadvarim asher diber Hashem al Moshe vayas ha'osos la'inei ha'om. This is before they go to Paro. What's the problem? Jumped the gun. They showed the miracles too soon. The miracles were supposed to be to strengthen your emunah that already exists. The miracles are not supposed to be the basis of your emunah. The emunah is supposed to be strengthened by that, in case somehow you get weak because Paro will what Paro does. Twice in Shmos, we made a mistake of having the basis of our relationship to Hashem to be in miracles. First, it has to be Chochmah. I understand Moshe and Aaron felt a little inadequate because they know how who are these people are stiff-necked and believe us and accept us. So that is what Purim comes to correct Chevra, and that's our first presentation. Next week we're going to do the rest of it. I'm not assigning this book, but I'll tell you, if you want to get your hands on a great piece of modern work on Megillas Esther, there's a book called The Dawn by Yoram Chazon. You ever seen it? It's a small, short little book. You can probably read it in one sitting.